Chapter 4. Zahariel rolled as the beast's beak stabbed downwards. He slithered onto his back and brought his pistol around. Three shots boomed from the barrel in a blaze of light, and Zahariel was momentarily blinded by the brightness. The noise was deafening, his helmet only slightly muffling the sounds. He scrambled away from the beast on his backside, fully expecting every second to be his last. He heard more shots, and as his vision cleared, he saw Nemiel crouching behind a tree and pumping shots from his pistol at the beast as it clawed at the remains of Zahariel's horse. Blood, like molten wax, oozed from three neat holes in the beast's chest. But if they had discomfited it, Zahariel could not tell, for it fought and roared as fiercely as it had when first attacking. The beast's wing shot out and clove through the trunk of the tree Nemiel was using for shelter and slammed into his cousin's chest. Nemiel dropped to the ground, his breastplate cracked but still whole, for the impact with the tree had blunted much of the force of the beast's blow. Zahariel scrambled to his feet as he saw the scattered remnants of his squad panic in the face of the monster. Eliath was pinned beneath his mount, the horse's flank opened from neck to rump, and Atias sat petrified at the edge of the clearing. The young boy's mount stood stock still, its ears pressed flat against its skull and its eyes wide with terror, rooting them both to the spot. The beast turned towards Atias and let out an ululating roar, spreading its wings and bunching its muscles as it prepared to attack. "Hey!" screamed Zahariel, stepping from the cover of the trees and waving his arms above his head.
"Over here!"
The beast's head turned on its sinuous neck, its blood-frothed jaws opening wide and its black soulless eyes fixing upon him. Zahariel drew his sword and aimed his pistol at the drooling monster.
"Ho, ugly!"
he shouted.
"If you want him, you'll have to take me first!"
He had no idea whether or not the beast understood the words he was saying, but there was little doubt that it understood the challenge of his actions on a primal animal scale. Without waiting for a response, Zahariel opened fire, the pistol bucking in his hand, and wet blooms of filmy blood burst from the beast's chest. It screeched and lunged towards him, its head shooting forward like the thrust of a sword. Zahariel leapt to the side, the blade of its beak slashing past him, barely a hand's span from skewering him. Faster than he would have believed possible, the beast's head twisted in the air to catch him a glancing blow just below his hip. He flew through the air and slammed into a tree, the breath exploding from his lungs and his weapons tumbling from his hands as he fell to the ground. Shouts and cries of terror sounded around Zahariel, and he shook his head as he tried to get his bearings once again. He heard his squad crying out in fear, and he spat blood as he pushed against the stinking ground and lifted his head. Though his vision swam crazily, he saw Eliath finally drag himself from beneath his dead mount, and Nemiel pick himself up from the beast's blow to drag himself behind another tree. Atias had snapped from his horrified paralysis and had ridden his horse into the trees, the beast lumbering back towards the tasty morsel of boy and horse. Zahariel used the tree next to him to haul himself to his feet, feeling a screaming pain in his twisted leg. He searched the ground for his fallen weapons, eventually spying the gleam of sunlight on the steel of his sword. He couldn't see his pistol and had no time to look for it. He grimaced in pain as he swept up his sword and limped towards the clearing as the beast's jaws snapped out and bit Atias' horse in two. The boy flung himself from the saddle just as the monster struck and landed with a thud on a fallen log, rolling over it and flopping to the ground in a heap. Zahariel's armor hissed as breaches in its structure caused it to fail, the mechanisms of its protective systems grinding and seizing. The full mass of the plate began to weigh heavily on him, and he grimaced in pain as the plates at his hip settled on his hurt leg.
"Spread out!" shouted Zahariel. "Get to the trees and spread out! Don't bunch up!"
More pistol shots boomed, and Zahariel saw Palian run forward to drag Atias back to the trees. The beast leapt over the dead horse, and its beak shot out, catching Palian by the shoulder and wrenching him from his feet. The boy screamed as he was lifted high into the air, but his screams were cut short as his arm and most of his shoulder was bitten through. He fell, trailing a drizzling arc of blood from the ruin of his body, the curve of his arm moving down the beast's throat with a horrid, peristaltic motion. Blood geezered from Palian, and his screams filled the clearing as the agony overcame the shock of the wound. The beast turned its head back to the fallen boy, its wing claws slashing twice. Pallion screamed no more. Zahariel cried out as Pallion was dismembered by the beast and stepped into the clearing, his vision blurred with tears of pain and terror. He raised his sword and held it unsteadily before him as he faced the monster that he knew would kill him. He knew that fact with cold certainty, but he could not allow others to suffer and die without at least trying to save them.
"Get away from them, you bastard!" he snarled. "These are my friends, and they're not for the likes of you!"
The beast looked up, and though its eyes were empty and cold, Zahariel could sense its monstrous hunger to kill. Beyond even what it needed to feed and survive, this creature needed to inflict pain and took some primitive enjoyment from the act of slaughter. The beast turned from Pallion's body and let loose a tremendous roar as it saw Zahariel advancing towards it, his sword aimed at its heart. The beast's wings rippled, and Zahariel knew what was coming. He brought his sword up as the creature's right wing slashed towards him. He swayed aside and swung his sword around in a downward arc that chopped into the wing where the claw began. Milky blood sprayed, and the claw was shorn from the beast as Zahariel's leg finally gave out beneath him, and he dropped to one knee. The beast howled in pain and drew back its injured wing, its jaws opening wide as it prepared to end his life. A shadow moved behind Zahariel as the beast lunged forward. The sight of its thousands of teeth filled his vision. Even as he smelt the rankness of its gullet and saw the scraps of flesh stuck between its teeth, a silver steel blur slashed over his head as an armored figure rode past him with a thunder of hooves and a mighty war shout. A long, heavy-bladed sword struck edge-on into the beast's mouth, the wielder's strength and the beast's momentum driving the blade through its jawbone and into the middle of its skull. The sword juddered to a halt, and the rider released the blade as he rode onwards, expertly wheeling his horse as the beast fell, its lunging body collapsing to the ground before Zahariel. The rider rode alongside the beast's skull. He drew a magnificent rotary-barreled pistol and aimed it at a point between the monster's eyes. Zahariel watched the hammer draw back and flinched at the percussive bang as the explosive bolt detonated with a hollow boom inside its head. Viscous fluids leaked from the monster's skull, and the dark predatory hunger in its black orbs of eyes was finally extinguished. A last fetid exhalation gusted from the beast's mouth, and Zahariel recoiled from the rotten stench. He looked up as his saviour holstered his pistol. The man wore the dark armour and hooded white surplice of the Order, the front of which was embroidered with the symbol of the downward-pointing sword.
"You're lucky to be alive, my boy," said the knight, and Zahariel instantly recognised the commanding tone. "Brother Amardis," he said, "thank you. You saved my life." "Aye," said Amardis, "and by the look of it you saved the lives of your friends, Zahariel."
"I was protecting my squad," said Zahariel, the last of his strength beginning to fade now that the battle was over. Amardis swung down from his saddle and caught him as he fell to the grass.
"Rest, Zahariel," said Amardis.
"No," whispered Zahariel, "I have to get them home."
"Let me do that for you, lad. You've done enough for one day."
"You were lucky," Nemiel would say to him later. "But luck can't be relied on. It's a finite resource. One day, it always runs out." For years afterwards, whenever Zahariel told the tale of their confrontation with the winged beast, his cousin would always make the same remark. He would say it privately, out of earshot of their brothers, in the arming chamber or beside the practice cages, as though he did not want to embarrass Zahariel in front of others. Yet equally, he was incapable of letting the matter rest. Something about the whole affair seemed to have worked its way under Nemiel's skin, as though the battle had become a source of subdued annoyance to him, even irritation. He never showed it in his face, nor let it invade his tone, but at times it felt as if he were chiding Zahariel in some way, as though he felt compelled to subtly make the point that all of his cousin's later successes, all of his glories, had been built on a lie. Zahariel would find this behaviour curious, but he would never raise the issue with his friend. He would do what Nemiel could not. He would let the matter rest. He would never question Nemiel's words. He would listen to them, ignore the hidden bitterness, and accept they were well meant. For him to do differently might have endangered their friendship.
"You were lucky," Nemiel would say. "If it wasn't for luck and Brother Amadis, the beast would have killed us all."
Zahariel could not disagree. A week later, Zahariel was made to tell the tale of the fight to his fellow supplicants in the training chambers. Each time he told of how he had stood before the monster, it would always seem a far more thrilling affair than it had been in reality. It would seem a story of high ideals and grand adventure to his listeners. It was not that he lied about the specifics of it in any way, but he would learn that repetition had a way of softening the edges of human experience. Each telling sounded like a fairy tale or fable. During the mad, frenetic rush of battle, it had been a life-or-death struggle, a hard-won victory achieved through the action of blood, sweat, and tears. It had been a close-run thing, and to the very end Zahariel thought the winged beast would kill them all. He thought the last instants of his life were to be spent gazing in horror into the beast's widening mouth as the black void of its maw expanded to swallow him whole. If he were to be left any headstone or grave marker, it would take the form of a regurgitated bolus created some time later, incorporating only those parts of him that were indigestible to his killer. This was the end he expected. The creature had seemed too strong, too formidable, and far too primal a force to ever be killed. But for Brother Amadis, those thoughts would have been correct. He would keep these thoughts from his fellows when he told the tale. He would be asked to tell the story often, but he realized no one wanted to hear of his private doubts. They wanted to hear something more stirring, full of heroic exploits and the expression of valor, something that spoke of the inevitable triumph of good over evil. It was human nature, he supposed, but his listeners expected him to be the hero of his story. They wanted him to be confident, wise, debonair, unflappable, dashing, handsome, charismatic, even inspiring. The truth was that at the time he had fully expected to fail. He had not allowed that thought to undermine his resolve, but it was there all the same. No one wanted to hear that truth. No one wanted to know their heroes could have feet of clay. Occasionally, in the brief quiet moments he would experience in the life ahead of him, he would wonder at the folly of human judgments. To his mind, his victory had been more special precisely because he had been afraid. His fellow supplicants, however, seemed to think it was improper to speak of the emotion at all. It was as if fear was a secret shame in every human heart, and his listeners wanted to be reassured that their heroes did not feel it, as though it meant they might one day be freed from their own fear. It seemed to Zahariel that this was wrong. The only way to overcome fear was to confront it, to pretend it did not exist or might somehow disappear one day, only made it worse.